The following Dharma talk was given at Common Ground Meditation Center in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
So, Mark and I titled this next section, What Does Wise Speech Look Like in the Messy World? And I'll start with the Buddha's words. He says, Practitioners, others may address you in a timely way or an untimely way. They may address you with what is true or what is false. They may address you in an affectionate way or a harsh way. They may address you in a beneficial way or an unbeneficial way. They may address you with a mind of goodwill or with inner hate. In any event, to train yourselves, our minds will be unaffected and we will say no evil words. We will remain sympathetic to that person's welfare with a mind of goodwill and with no inner hate. So I wanted to reflect on this particular instruction about speaking from a mind of goodwill or having our words connect to kindness in our hearts. And, you know, if someone speaks to us and their words are like hurling rocks, you know, how easy is it to respond with kindness in the heart, you know? And so this has been a particular challenge that I've looked at both like in my intimate family relationships, in the workplace, and, you know, in taking these instructions to heart, that wise speech needs to come from a place of kindness. But when the heart is really complicated, when there's fear and when there's anger, I noticed what started happening, the patterns that started happening was that I stopped communicating because I knew I'm angry right now, this doesn't feel safe. Or I'm fearful right now, this doesn't feel safe. And so that didn't quite work either, you know. So it's like I feel like there's a kind of koan when I hear these beautiful words like Thich Nhat Hanh. If it isn't spoken with metta, it isn't true. And then I think of Audre Lorde, who's an African-American writer and civil rights activist who was born in 1934, and she has these words that are part of a much longer essay, but she writes, when we speak, we are afraid our words will not be heard nor welcomed. But when we are silent, we are still afraid, so it is better to speak. So that's really powerful and beautiful to me. And so what is our refuge? What is our standing place when communication needs to happen, right, in the messy world, but we are in the grips of our fear or of our anger? What is our refuge in those moments? So for me, I feel like I've really tried to be creative and try something new, like, because the silence was in fact just reinforcing fear, right? It was just reinforcing fear, and I wasn't learning, you know, I wasn't kind of extending myself into this into this messy, uncertain place of speech and conflict. And just the lessons of not being surprised by the messiness, nor the consequences when they're not what I had hoped for, that there's still something to learn. So to really understand my intentions, that the intention is to learn and to grow, and to rest that the intention is around goodness, is around my aspiration toward greater freedom in the path. So that feels like an anchor that can be trust, that can be trusted. So for me, like sitting in my fear, nothing could move. But there was wisdom in seeing that and wisdom in trying something different. And then, as always, the protection of our mindfulness of our own fear and anger and the forces of our own fear and anger. I was very moved. Mark and I went to Plum Village, Thich Nhat Hanh's community in France in 2005, and we participated in one of the ritual ceremonies that they have there. It's, I can't remember precisely the name, watering the seeds of kindness, something like that. But it's, it was basically about conflict resolution. And one thing that Thich Nhat Hanh learned at Plum Village with a lot of the monks coming from Vietnam and the trauma of war and the complication of community life, that there needed to be ritual, there needed to be a deliberate way for people to work with these very powerful forces of fear and greed and anger. So he had ritual circles where if someone had a particular conflict or a particular falling out with someone, the group would sit in a circle and there would be a lotus blossom or some kind of flower in the middle. And with the person that was dealing with a hurt or had a conflict, they could go to the circle and lift up the flower and go to the person with whom they had a struggle. And their first job was just to connect and to recognize and say out loud all the things that they appreciated. All the things that they, sorry, this makes me cry because it's like, it's so beautiful. Yeah, and then in the safety and protection of the community, you know, that container of beings in a circle, they could then say what the difficulty was, what they were challenged by. And so there was just this, for me, I think part of it is respecting the power of greed and anger and hatred and fear, like really getting that we need to honor these forces and we need the community, we need the Sangha as we work through it. So, you know, I appreciated his respect and his creativity, and this is how we're going to work with this as a community. So it was really a really powerful example. And I want to read, because this is powerful too, I want to read what he has to say about how we treat our anger. And he says, "Treat your anger with the utmost respect and tenderness, for it is no other than yourself. Do not suppress it. Simply be aware of it. Awareness is like the sun. When it shines on things, they are transformed. When you are aware that you are angry, your anger is transformed. If you destroy your anger, you destroy the Buddha. For Buddha and Mara, Mara is the personification of ignorance, Buddha and Mara are of the same essence. Mindfully dealing with anger is like taking the hand of a little brother." And I'm going to read it again, and I'm going to put fear in the place of anger because it's true for fear too. So treat your fear with the utmost respect and tenderness, for it is no other than yourself. Do not suppress it. Simply be aware of it. Awareness is like the sun. When it shines on things, they are transformed. When you are aware that you are fearful, your fear is transformed. If you destroy fear, you destroy the Buddha. For Buddha and Mara are of the same essence. Mindfully dealing with fear is like taking the hand of a little brother. So I want to put here also the words of Sister Siripana. You know, how do we anchor ourselves amidst our difficult experience? And she talks about the power of the body and our groundedness in the body. She says, "The body, being the first foundation of mindfulness, is the most easy within which to sustain attention and the least deceptive. Our body is a very honest thing. It doesn't tell us lies like the mind that rationalizes and tries to convince us it has good reasons for following its wishes and whims. So the body is a very good place to use as a first base for our expeditions into the more hair-raising spheres of the mind. And it's where attention should gravitate towards as a kind of anchoring post. The image is often used of this post firmly stuck in the ground, where there's something fixed in one place and you start pulling against it, you notice there's a tugging. But if you have no reference point, then the mind is just constantly shooting off here and there, and oops, there we are again, swinging through the trees. We sit here, feeling the body pressing against the seat, feeling the whole body, the posture, sitting, standing, walking, lying down. This is anchoring the mind in the body. A very simple thing, and yet it does start to give us a tremendous possibility. And I would add that also a tremendous protection. And just one other note, in the way that Mark was talking about kind of how renunciation can be a kind of joy, should be a kind of joy, I think we can see our discipline of free speech as a way to free us up and as a way to free our speech up. Like we can trust our intention and we can trust our integrity, and that can allow us to take risks and to be free and to be creative with our speech because we're paying attention and because we care. So to take it as a practice that will both be refreshing to the heart, to allow us to engage in a wholesome and energetic way in the world, anchored in our mindfulness, anchored in the goodness of our intention. And maybe I'll just add one more story. It doesn't quite fit neatly here, but it refers to one other instruction by the Buddha, which was avoid self-praise and the censure of others with our words. Avoid self-praise and the censure of others. And it reminded me, these words, of a very poignant story I recall, a memory from when I was a child, where a girlfriend who was a little bit younger than I was and who had a little bit of a difficult time figuring out how to be in the group of friends. She was awkward and she'd tell lies and she was just struggled. And I loved her. And then one particular day when she was telling a lie or acting out in some way, and I just felt like she needed a lesson, you know. And I'm little, so I want to say that again. I was little, and so I said, "We're just not going to talk to you for a while." That was my thing, and I was sort of the ringleader. And it was my thought: she needs to learn this, right? And so our little group of girls stopped talking to her for a little while. And I felt sort of in my, so I'm going to decide when we get to talk to her again. Like this was sort of in my heart. And I recognized a kind of taste of power, a kind of something yummy, something like powerful at first. It was something I liked in that role. But then eventually it really, it left a really bitter taste in my mouth and in my heart, like that I had censured my friend, I had betrayed my friend in the guise and the appearance of like teaching her something she needed to learn, which of course is just a silly story, but it was like about self-importance and about that delicious gravitation when we identify with power. And I feel like this happens all the time in our adult discourses, where it's about power much more than it's about truth. It's about feeding our egoic need to substantiate ourselves, and then everything else takes second place. So I don't know, that was just like one instance that just stuck in my heart, just to recognize how we can play that game. So not censuring others. Maybe I'll just leave it there. Okay. I'm gonna
go. This talk, like all programs at Common Ground, is offered freely in the spirit of generosity. To learn more about Common Ground and its programs, or if you would like to donate, please visit our website, www.commongroundmeditation.org.